It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score. And now, the Wednesday special edition of Crunch Time with Steve Tannen and USA Today's George Schroeder. Brought to you by Bi-Mart, just right for the Northwest. It's Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score.
Hey! How you doing? We're doing just swell, thanks for asking. It's a Wednesday. I'll tell you right now, if you're a sports fan, you're like, at least I ain't a Braves fan. Oof-da. I don't know. I'm just trying to see. Could you possibly relate to anything that bad with so much at stake?
I am depressed.
It's 11-0. They're in the top of the third.
Atlanta's gotten that many outs already, huh?
Fulton Evans, who has had such a fantastic season, that is the guy who's waking up after the dream, taking the SATs late in his underwear. The car's going backwards, fast down a hill with no brakes. What are the worst nightmares you have where, like, you don't die? He's having that one now, except there's one catch. It's on video, it's forever, and nobody's ever going to forget it.
It's forever the one where you're falling and you think you're about to hit the ground, or, like, I've had it where I'm, like, riding a bike or something. It's anytime you fall over and then you get that full body twitch and you wake up. But it's that, but every time he wakes up, he's still in a dream. It's just like it just an infinities of inception levels deep of dealing with this pain and struggle that it will never now go away. It will never go away.
So you cover Major League Baseball for a living. They send you to Atlanta for the playoffs. You were in St. Louis. You work for the Journal-Constitution. You follow the Braves. You work for a local radio station. I mean, what's harder to come up with? The question for him or his response? Because neither of you have ever seen or dealt with anything like this.
I don't know what I would say. Like, imagine.
So what happened?
I don't know what I would do if I had the worst show performance of my life here on the show, where, like, every segment I accidentally swore.
Shut us
I
off.
I let callers on the air, and they swore. I kept us off the air when we should have been on the air. I threw a computer out the window, and then someone was like, so, Nick, can you talk to us about what went wrong today? I don't know what I would say.
I don't even know. Where do you start?
I don't think you say anything. I think I'm sure he isn't happy, obviously. So you don't go, so how are you feeling about your performance today? Do you
punch.
Think you let your team down? Oh, because that'll send him off real
so fast. My first thought was the kid who got surprised today. You get up, he's a Braves fan, but he understood, you know, he's going to school. The game started at 5, and, you know, maybe dad showed up at 2:27 and pulled him out of last period early. I got tickets to the Braves game. Yes, this is all. Well, that stunk. Please, I'm calling Children's Services.
Dad, take me back to school.
I'm emotionally scarred for the rest of my life.
I'm going to go to school on Saturday to make up the hour and a half that I missed today. This was not worth it.
Right. I would have rather been in school unprepared for a test, getting mocked by my teachers, sitting in my underwear. Thank you very little.
So if this was happening to your team and they gave up 10 runs in the first inning, do you turn the game off? There's no way. There's no reason to keep watching, right?
You find something else to do and you check in, and if it's like 11-3 in the fourth, maybe you check back in.
Oh, I don't even know about 11-3. There is no I would turn the game off. There's no reason to watch. Like, go for a walk, go outside. Like, it's the fall. It's at least here in Eugene, it's a beautiful day. You can go for a walk. Walk to the liquor store and grab yourself a beer. Find the nearest bar.
Walk circle Fulton County.
Yeah.
See how long it takes.
Just, I mean, if you're at the game, try and walk from the new stadium back to the old stadium. Just be like, I'm going to go for a walk. It's fine. I'll pick up an Uber later. I don't need it.
Or you just go full on Blutarski, and my advice to you is start drinking heavily.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing. You have to have, if you're committed to staying, one, drive responsibly, but two beers.
Oh, stay at the game.
Oh, if you're staying at the game, yeah, it's
you've got... there's a few different worlds here. Did you go out to a bar to watch a game with your buddies and you're just like, hey, I can go back home and be miserable? Are you hanging out at home or did you go to the game? I mean,
in all three situations, I think I would leave. I wouldn't want to be at home. I wouldn't want to be at the bar. I wouldn't want to be at the game. I would leave after the first
thing. I don't know if I would leave before like the seventh. Just that, what if? Could you imagine? I mean, even if it gets to 11-6.
All you need is the ticket stub, and all you need to do is, just in case, you've got the ticket stub and you can say, I was there. Doesn't matter about anything else. You can just keep lying and say, I was there.
Just make the lie big, make it simple, and never relent from it. Is that what you're saying?
You come into work the next day with your frame. You buy, you know, just you rip out whatever photo you've gotten, whatever random photo frame. You throw the ticket stub in it, and then it becomes the centerpiece on your desk at work. I was at this game. You don't tell anybody you never left. Just I was there. It was bad. I had some beers. I forgot about the middle of the game, and all of a sudden, I remember every single detail about the comeback. And that's all you need to do.
Well, of course, now in this day and age, it's easy to remember the details. You got play by play. I mean, you have aids in fudging your horror. But my concern is for the children who looked so forward to this. Maybe dad sprung it on him last night or today. What's the most disappointing? First of all, I'm so struck by what we're seeing. And by the way, there's now one out and two on for St. Louis again. So they're not done. They're going to get to the point where the Braves are going to need two touchdowns, two two-point conversions to lose by three. The most disappointing game you've gone to, where it's not a blowout. I mean, the bottom line is, if you went to see a 500 team and they lost in the last second or on a miracle play or on a grand slam, that's one thing. But with a chance to advance to your league championship series and have it be over before your third sip of beer, that's just gut-wrenching.
Think of the people that were at the game that didn't even get to their seats because tailgating,
traffic
hit or whatever, because it's like a random 5:30 start, so you're going to run into regular people around town. But you could have gotten to your seat, and it could have been 7-0, and there's a pitching change, and you would go, why did I walk in?
What is going on here? All right, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It's a Wednesday. Let's get to something more pleasant, college football. Our weekly view from the middle. He's the columnist for USA Today. Check out his work in the red section of the paper. Online, usatoday.com. On Twitter, the handle is @GeorgeSchroeder. Mr. Schroeder, how are things?
Things are good. How are you? Better than if I lived in Atlanta.
Yeah, now if memory serves correctly from your childhood, the station where it used to be Jack Buck calling games, if you may not have the passion you do for college football, but are you somewhat of a St. Louis Cardinals fan?
I'm an October baseball guy, and really when the Cardinals are playing. But as a kid growing up, I used to watch or listen, it was more listening to almost all the games. So back in the day, but that's been a long time. So, but yeah, I grew up a Cardinal fan. That was a regional tie for those of us who grew up in Arkansas.
Was it KMOX? Am I ringing a bell there? Or I'm just trying to think. There was a legendary state.
KMOX was, and I don't know if it still is even, but it was a long time, for the longest time, flagship for St. Louis. But you could pick them up in the car radio sometimes, but you also had affiliates all over the South and the Midwest from the local stations. So
right.
There was always a Little Rock station carrying the Cardinals. And one of the Little Rock TV stations would carry the Cardinals local broadcast back in the days before, some sort of a Fox regional channel or something was there.
Interesting. All right. I always need the Schroeder timeline. So you were in the swamp for Florida Auburn. I think most thought this would end up being more of a reality check for the Gators. I don't know if anybody was sold on the caliber of teams they'd beat, and even Miami, you know, Tennessee. How surprised were you by the outcome in this one?
I was mildly surprised by the outcome, I guess. Florida really got after Bo Nix, which should not be surprising because they're really good on the edges, especially defensively. But I think people were a little bit surprised by how well Florida's offense played in spurts. And really, you only made a couple of big plays. They had the big play to start with the 64-yard touchdown pass to Freddie Swain. And then they had the big play that ended it, basically, even with 9 minutes left, put them up 11. Until that point, you kept thinking to yourself, Auburn is notching, is kind of knocking on the door and eventually going to find a way to get the lead here. But when Jamichael Pirine hit the 88-yard touchdown run down the sideline, it just changed things. So a huge, huge win for the Gators and maybe the first of what could be several losses for an Auburn team that's really good but has a growing young quarterback and maybe the nation's toughest schedule.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned it in passing, but Dan Mullen, the Gator coach, he's actually an offensive guy. His defensive coordinator, Todd Grantham, who's got a really good resume, has worked in the SEC. He was actually working with the Browns when they won 10 games about a decade ago. But that performance defensively, I think Auburn had about 270 total yards. And like you said, they really brought out the freshman in Bo Nix. How impressive was that game plan and execution?
No, it was really impressive. And Grantham sometimes doesn't get his due. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, defensive coordinators, and Oregon fans know this too, defensive coordinators are sometimes the whipping boys for fan bases. Well, Grantham has been that for a couple different fan bases, including Georgia, where his propensity to blitz became known as third in Grantham. And there are things like that. But I think he's done a really nice job, and Dan Mullen obviously liked him enough that he brought him along with him from Mississippi State.
Talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. And, of course, the worst reward ever, Florida now has to go play at LSU, who have really just crushed everything in their path except for Texas. I guess Joe Burrow in the Heisman conversation in October. Are we still confident that this is a step up in the level of SEC contender as Florida goes from Auburn to LSU?
Well, I think so because of the offense, but LSU's defense correspondingly is not as good as Auburn's. Now, that said, I don't think Florida's offense is the kind of offense that's going to be able to keep up in a shootout. So I think what you've seen with the SEC is kind of the Big 12 or Pac-12ization of the contenders, at least when it comes to Alabama, and now LSU's gotten with the program. And I think if unless you're built like Georgia is, where you're so talented that you can probably keep playing the old school Alabama football, the old school SEC football. If you're not built like that, then you're going to struggle to keep up, and you better get yourself an offense like Alabama, and which is what LSU did. So I think it's really hard for Florida, which would like to be like those other teams but isn't yet, to probably keep up with LSU. But so I think LSU's offense is, to answer your question a little shorter, I think LSU's offense is a whole lot better than Auburn's. But I think its defense is not up to the LSU standards we expect, and I don't think it's anywhere close to as good as Auburn's defense is. I think in Baton Rouge, though, that offense will be a load for Florida to handle. I'm not sure they can do it.
You'll be at the fairgrounds for one of the game's great traditions. I know you and I have talked about it in the past, but for some who might not be exactly aware, it was once the Red River Shootout, now rivalry, sort of like Georgia-Florida, the cocktail party at a neutral site. But beyond it now being a huge game with national implications, what makes Texas-Oklahoma so unique?
Well, where it's played, and, you know, obviously it's two of the more traditional programs in college football, traditional perennial powers, no question. And it was a huge game when it was a non-conference matchup for all those years. The last quarter century, it's been a conference matchup, and sometimes it's even bigger than when it was a non-conference matchup. But it's always been played in the middle of October in the middle of the State Fair of Texas. And so you're in this, you know, the Cotton Bowl is on one day of the year a venerable old stadium. The rest of the year it's kind of a relic at this point. And, you know, but on that one day of the year you put 90 plus thousand fans in and you split them in horseshoes. You have a section of burnt orange wearing fans that starts at 150 and wraps around an end zone to the other 50. And then you have a horseshoe of crimson clad fans that starts at that 50 and wraps around the other end zone to that other 50. And so you have these two fantastic horseshoes, and the pageantry of it all and the picture of it all is fantastic. And then just beyond the stadium, there's the Midway and a giant Ferris wheel, and the State Fair of Texas is going on. And there's nothing like that setting in all of sport, really, but in all of college football, certainly. And then you do that in the middle of the season, it's kind of like having a bowl game in the middle of the year.
One of the things, football-wise, I mean, now Jalen Hurts, Sam Ellinger, I don't know if these two have played with more high-level quarterback play since, I guess, Colt McCoy versus Sam Bradford. You go back like 11 years. So just from a football perspective, I mean, this is not only the two teams, aside from Baylor, unbeaten in league, but nationally now, it's like, I'm not playing the who is back and who isn't, but like you said, for the second Saturday in October, man, this is a big one.
Well, it is. It's a really big one. And look, for Texas, it potentially gets you back into a playoff conversation, or it eliminates you, because I don't think even a two-loss Big 12 champion, which they could still be, right?
It'd right.
only be their first Big 12 loss if they were to lose. But I don't think a two-loss Big 12 champion is getting into the playoff this year. The one thing we haven't seen yet in the playoff era is a two-loss entry. And so I think it's could be an eliminator for Texas. For Oklahoma, it's not necessarily an eliminator if they lose, but it's certainly an accelerator if they win. You know, a year ago they lost to Texas. And by the way, that was two pretty good quarterbacks too. You had Kyler Murray, who had led a furious comeback, and then you had Sam Ellinger, who probably wasn't as good as he is now, but was still pretty good. But after Oklahoma lost that game to Texas, they then were able to avenge that loss and maybe erase it to a certain extent in the eyes of the selection committee in the Big 12 title game. And that's the one thing that beginning last year makes this different than it's ever been, is the fact that they you know, very possibly could play a rematch some years. And I don't know if you want to say many years, but some years they could play a rematch. And we saw it in the first year.
I want to get to another team we talked about last week, Ohio State. You know, they were a big eye test team, but, you know, they played Florida Atlantic, a Nebraska team with a long way to go. Then came Michigan State, who was nationally ranked. And despite how you felt about them overall, it looked like they had a really, really good defense. And then J.K. Dobbins ran all over them. Justin Fields had a really efficient game at quarterback. They had more than 500 total yards. I guess, how much did this game do to further your Buckeye belief?
It did plenty. I mean, you know, we talked about it last week, and I thought they were the Buckeyes were maybe the most impressive team all season so far, just in how they looked, but they hadn't played anybody. Well, they finally got a look at somebody with Michigan State, which is a fringe top 25 team. Not a great team, not as good as some of the Michigan State teams we've seen through the year, but it's a fringe top 25 team, and they really were very impressive again. And they're going to play tougher games. They're going to play Penn State. They're going to play Wisconsin. They're going to play Michigan. Obviously, there are going to be some tougher games on the schedule, but they have routinely looked impressive and complete on both sides of the ball. And I don't know why anybody would we can quibble about their schedule so far. We can't quibble about what they've looked like. And I actually thought the schedule, we finally saw them play somebody and look just as good.
When a couple final thoughts for George Schroeder. When you left Oregon, the Ducks were, you know, the high-octane, flashy offense that was kind of a trendsetter. Now in 2019, they've got a new defensive coordinator. Their offense has, like, a goal to be more SEC-like. They lead the North. They host Colorado. You know, you're wired in nationally, so from your chair or from what you've discussed or read from your peers, well, what's kind of the national buzz about this Duck team?
Well, I mean, I think everything sort of starts with the fact that people are sort of discounted the Pac-12, rightly or wrongly. And so Oregon falls into that, obviously, as a member of the Pac-12. When they lost the game to Auburn, especially when they're up 21-6 and coulda, woulda, shoulda won the thing, I think people kind of pushed them aside. It doesn't mean you couldn't get back into the mix in the playoff, but you're out of the conversation for now. And by the way, I think it's really a long shot to get back in the mix because of the Pac-12's reputation, which is a little unfair and somewhat warranted at the same time. So I would just tell you this. I think people look at Oregon as an interesting team. They're clearly not seen as, you know, a no doubt surefire every year top 10 program, which is what they were several years back. That doesn't mean you can't get there, but that's not where they are now, I don't think, in national perception.
All right, week to week, George Schroeder's the guy who I see actually clean the slate and reevaluate. I may have shirts made. So as we speak right now, who was in the mix and who would be your playoff four?
Yeah, well, so I still think it's seven teams that are in the mix, and I've just moved out Auburn for now. They could get back in it with that schedule if they win. And I've moved Florida in for now. I still have my concerns about the Gators, but that was a huge, huge win. And by the way, the Gators have also played two FCS teams, so they don't have – their resume is sort of erratic and inconsistent. But, look, I've got Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma, and who do I have? LSU? Is that who I had? I can't remember now.
Wow.
LSU.
All right.
This sort of furthers my point, which is
yes. You had LSU at four.
Teams, that's what I thought. But you could take the. I have Clemson at five.
Yeah.
I've got Georgia and Florida in that mix, and of those seven, I think you could shake them up, put them in a hat, and draw them out. And if Clemson was number one, people would howl, but you could make a good argument. And if Florida was number one, people would howl, but you could make a good argument. And you could go right down the list. And you can put them in any order you want, and there's a good argument for it. And it that to me is fascinating. And the good people of Wisconsin right now are unhappy with me because I'm not putting them in that mix and saying it's an eight teams put them all in a hat thing. But I've got them at number eight. If they go beat Ohio State, well, obviously that'll change things. I just to me, Steve, I think this is as wide open, and people are going to fall away. That's how this works, but. Just based on what it looks like we've seen so far, it's as wide open a race as I can remember, basically at either the midpoint or right near the midpoint of the season.
I agree. And actually, I love that because it just seems so anticlimactic with like three or four teams in the last 4 years. It's been like, well, now here we are already. But no, it's awesome. So you'll be at the fairgrounds for Texas and Oklahoma. That should be a fun one. On Twitter, it's at George Schroeder. Online, usatoday.com. In the newspaper, it's the red section. Great stuff as always, George. Much appreciate your time. Travel safe.
Hey, thank you, man. Take care.
Take it easy. You know, I don't think I've ever gone this far into the season because it used to be last week, right? The first week in October, they would have released the first BCS standings. By the way, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I would still have Clemson in there. Sorry. They haven't lost. They're national champs, and they won on the road in conference. I gave you my theory about Penn State in 1994 winning on the road. Indiana scores a late touchdown to make it a 6 or 7 point game. They get left out. They drop to number two, and because it was pre-BCS, they never got their shot at Nebraska. They were number one, went unbeaten, won their bowl game, and weren't the national champs. Okay. That brings us to break time. We'll do that. We'll be back with more Crunch Time. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
2-2 pitch. Alvarez drives one toward right center field. Kiermaier sprinting over. He's not going to get to it. One hop up against the wall. Altuve flying around second, heading for third. He gets the go sign. Here comes a relay. Altuve slides. He's out at the plate.
I'm insane over that play, by the way. A play like that. First of all, did you see Kiermaier on the postgame explaining that he, first of all, love guys who's head in the game. So he's telling, welcome back to Crunch Time, by the way. Appreciate the time. Boy, that's some good insight from George Schroeder. To me, head in the game is the common denominator of greatness in a player and great moments from all players. We were joking years ago now. We're sitting here and it happens to tie into Oregon softball and Jenna Lilly, the third baseman. And there were a couple people on and, you know, we had the game on, but obviously I was doing the show. We were BSing around and she made a play where they're first and second. She made a play going to her left and knowing there were two out. And she kind of deked the ball to second, spun around, and caught the runner going home. And ended up being a relatively easy play because she made the play before, when she's sitting there at third base with glove and hand on knee. She knew how many were out. She knew, and it's something you're taught from Little League. What are you going to do when the ball's hit to you? With Kiermaier, you could see him. He wasn't, it's not something he came up with. I knew there were this. I knew who was on base. I knew who was at the bat and what the tendencies were. I knew where the ball was lined. And he said, I knew I had to get some juice on the relay because it had to be perfect. And it was. If you saw, if you have to go, and I think, Nick, you and I were talking about this, if the relay man who was the second basist, Adames, I think, if he had to go a foot to his left or right, he's probably safe. And you don't know what the hell's going to happen in that game after. The outcome was very much in doubt. He hit him. It would be like if you set up a dummy and you had, I don't care at what level it was, and put like a foot by foot place, try to hit that spot, try to hit that. Basically hit him in the head. And he did, and the turn and fire and the throw was just with such authority on the money. It's just it's as perfect a play as you can have in that sport.
Did you, were there any StatCast numbers that came out as to like how far Adames' throw was and how fast it was? I'm guessing there's got to be numbers on it somewhere because they're constantly talking about like, you know, distance traveled for throws. And I'm sure that, you know, just even a timer on the relay is insanity enough. It was insane. Like it was the most perfect throw in the case of when you needed a more than perfect throw to get Jose Altuve out at the plate, and they absolutely know it was absolutely perfect. I don't understand how you can throw a baseball that far, that hard, and you're just like, I'm a shortstop. Yeah, it's just kind of, it's what happens.
I'll tell you what, I would like to know Altuve's time from hitting second to hitting home. He could not have gotten any faster. He was wheeling around
he's already
third base,
a quick
and he's
dude.
Fast.
I think Adames let go of the ball right when after Altuve had rounded third. So it was basically like 85 feet, you know, to get the – he had 85 feet of Altuve running to be able to throw a ball like 110 feet or whatever. And it sounds like one of those math questions that's like, you know, you have train A leaves the
– Chicago.
Yeah, train A leaves the station heading south at, you know, this fast while train B left hours ago, but it's heading – it's going this slow. At what time will they collide? Or what time are they going to meet? And it's like, well, yeah, Adames throws a baseball this hard with Jose Altuve running this fast. How far away? Who will – you know, will the ball beat Altuve to the plate or whatever? Yes, it will. It turns out he threw it just hard enough,
and I think Altuve was stunned because I mean you challenge perfection because there's a reason it's perfection. It really doesn't happen except in that case. And you know, first of all, a couple of the pundits, one of the guys on with Rome today, was actually talking about, you know, what this might do to Houston's rotation for the Yankee series. Whoa. Game five. How many people had 13-0 St. Louis in the fourth? You don't know what that. And let me tell you something. chances are, if this is an NFL playoff game and it's teams that have already made the playoff, survived a round, it's not going to be 42-3. Baseball, it very easily could be. Baseball's the total X factor in a do-or-die game. I guess in the NBA, we've even had blowouts in the finals, but they're few and far between, and this is the version of winning by 40 in basketball. So, this is crazy. But, by the way, the Cardinals are up 13-0 in the fourth. They just got another hit with one out.
They're challenging plays, too. There was a ground ball hit to Dansby Swanson, and he threw it over to second, and Albie's, like, on the transition or on the catch.
Look, he might have dropped
it. Yeah, might have dropped the ball, and they called him safe, and Atlanta at that point would have challenged it. But still, like, you're still, like, kind of fighting. You're down a touchdown, and you know, you need two touchdowns and two extra points to get back into this, and you're still fighting for every last out because you need every last out. This is insanity.
I gotta tell you the truth, until it's way late, I'm challenging too. I trust nothing. This is do or die. By the way, we're looking for disappointments. I don't think I phrased that properly. When I talk about going to a game that ends disappointing, I'm not talking about a guy hits a three-run homer and in the ninth inning and 6-4 turns to 7-6. You saw a great game. I'm talking you just got there. It's over. Everything you thought. I got a couple of texts about Auburn, Oregon, and yeah, that was my bad. I didn't forget. And that's more heartbreaking. This isn't a heartbreaking game. This is a disaster. I'm talking, you got tickets. You were up for it. It's all anybody was talking about. A lot of times when you're a big-time sports fan, that's your group. There could be a lot of people in your family, friends. You know, if you're in college, people you work with. I'm talking about, you're there for 3.5 hours. And in 17 minutes, that's it. That's the end. Everybody go home. There's no point in being there any longer. And the game has to have some magnitude to it. I mean, if it's the ninth game of the year and you're seeing 2 4-4 teams, yeah, if there's a blowout, it's kind of disappointing. But where was the season going anyway? You know, the Armed Forces Bowl or the San Diego Poinsettia Credit Union Bowl.
Poinsettia. I would say if you've traveled to a game and it's like the only game you're going to see, even if it's a random baseball game or whatever, if it's the only game you're going to see that year and it's boom, that over that quick, even if it's a meaningless game, if it's
all right, I'll take time and money into consideration.
Yeah, if it's the game that you see, or you paid a whole boatload of money to sit, you know, dead center on the 50-yard line.
Judges, yes, we're going to allow that codicil into
one.
Our.
I got one.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. If you want to jump on in, somebody's like, if I was a Brave fan, I would ask for my money back. You really? It says on here, Braves baseball. Would you, seriously, lie detector time? Did we get treated to Braves baseball? No. Here's your $29.50 back. Just get the hell out of my face.
$29.50. I'm just, well, it's standing room only out here.
Who am I kidding? All right. 284-8571. The Oregon fuel injection hotline. Let's bring in John. John, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going well, Steve, better than my voice would indicate. But I've got kind of a two-parter for you. I was real surprised to see that Oregon was a 20-point favorite over Colorado. To me, that sounds about twice what it should be, but, of course, I'm no expert. But based on, I'd like to hear what your thoughts are on that 20-point spread. But the other thing I was going to say, how long do you think it's going to be with a trend in gambling towards more and more acceptance that we're just going to, I could walk down the street or get in my truck and drive 6 blocks and go place a bet and take the points, even though I love Oregon, you know, and take the chalk or how to go against the chalk. Two-parter. What do you think of the spread, and how long do you think it's going to be until we can make bets in Eugene just open?
Oh, in Eugene. All right. Thanks a lot, John. The two-parter is I don't even have to speculate because on Monday somebody asked me the line. I said I would have made Oregon about 11 or 12, a touchdown and a half, maybe a little more, coming home, good defense. I think when it comes to the odds makers, they're all encompassing. They didn't see Oregon beat Cal 17-7. They saw an Oregon offense that actually moved the ball and had some good offensive series that just happened to culminate in turnovers. And they also saw an Oregon offense that's healing. And they saw an Oregon offense that is, an Oregon defense that is going to be far superior to what the Buffs have faced so far. I mean, 35-30 against Arizona last week. We saw what Arizona's defense looked like against Hawaii. I mean, they got crucified. They are lacking. And you look at the Buffs have given up 31 points to Colorado State, 31 to Nebraska, 30 to Air Force, 31 to Arizona State, 35 to Arizona. Did you hear what I just said? Their best defensive effort was 30 points. So I think that, in essence, what the logic is that Oregon gets into the, wait for it, 30s. And if they hold Colorado to even double what they've been, that's where you get the betting line. And Oregon at Autzen among bettors, and remember, the Nevada houses, the gambling houses, their goal is to get half of you to bet one way, half of you to bet the other. There's still that kind of mystique among the Nationals that when Oregon goes home, things are a little bit different. And as far as when we're going to see gambling in Eugene, let's see how things explode numerically on the coast. Because now the bottom line is you can bet in Oregon and you could darn well guarantee if it starts to explode. I mean, put it to you this way. It was July 1st, 5 years ago, when weed became legal? If somebody would have said, I drive home from Valley River all the way to Bethel, I see like 16 places I can buy weed where it is now. I would draw a similar parallel to that. If it becomes lucrative and people are making money, it's going to be all over the place. By the way, the schneid is broken. Josh Donaldson tanks one to left center, and the Braves start to chip away 13-1.
This is from this morning at 5:30 from WeekWeek.com. Starting as soon as next week, the Oregon Lottery expects to take bets on professional sports online or via a cell phone app called Scoreboard, with players allowed to deposit up to $250,000 in the accounts to place bets.
No, I'm not. If I can't go 300 large, I ain't in.
Is it multiple $250,000 bets?
I want to be able to parlay two $250,000 bets in the same weekend. All right, before we break with a home game, our tailgater is going to be rocking and rolling out at Autzen. We start 2 hours before kickoff, so 5 o'clock. And courtesy of our friends at Coors Light and your pals here at KUJZ, it's the VIP tailgater. Pick up your pass. They're free. Any Toxic Wings location, whether it's River Road, Valley River Food Court, or on West 11th, you get in the cold ones, the beverages, and the food on us. So again, drop by, get your pass, come tailgating with us and celebrate Oregon Duck football. And go Ducks from all of us at KJZ 95.3, The Score. All right, break time is here. We'll come back, adhere to the bell. The Crunch Exchange is next. 95.3, The Score.
All rise, all respect the bell. It's time for the Crunch Exchange. It's how we wrap up Crunch Time on a Wednesday. I bring up a prospectus from the world of sports. Steve tells us if he's buying, selling, or pending on said prospectus. We begin. The Houston Astros took a big risk yesterday, going with Justin Verlander as their Game 4 starter on just 3 days of rest. Mr. Cade Upton was torched for 3 runs in the first inning, and it was the difference in the game. The Astros lost 4-1, leading to a Game 5. The logic behind it makes sense for A.J. Hinch making this decision. Best case, Verlander is Verlander. And the Astros wrap up the series with one less day rest than the Yankees got before going to the ALCS. It's done and dusted. Worst case, it's what we got last night. Verlander gets torched. The Rays take all the momentum. You've got a game back, game five back home with the series turned over on its head. But still, with that worst case scenario happening, things are looking up for Houston. They're turning things over to yet another Cy Young candidate on full rest. And essentially, Hinch is saying, look, if you're going to beat us by beating our two Cy Young winners for a second time after losing to them the first time, there's not much I can do about that. Even before their two wins at home, Tampa was showing signs of being able to at least hang with Houston, nearly coming back in Game 2 as Roberto Osuna labored in a 3-1 win. Is it another time for a Cinderella story in Tampa? The prospectus, the Tampa Bay Rays beat the Houston Astros.
Whoa!
Oh, yes, indeed.
Now you're asking me to go on a limb. And you heard me leading up to yesterday. I was like, history does not like great pitchers altering their schedule. They just don't like it. Now, as far as winning this one, I'm just going to go with my heart. I'm rooting for Tampa. Go Rays.
In the second of three consecutive Game 5s, the Washington Nationals are on the road trying to take down one of the best teams in baseball, the Los Angeles Dodgers. LA has won the NL West 7 consecutive years. They've made the NLCS in 4 of those 7 years. Meanwhile, the probably cursed Washington Nationals have been knocked out in Game 5 of the NLDS in 3 of the last 4 times they've made the playoffs. To some, their wild card game win means that they did win a playoff series because on a technicality, they progressed in the playoffs, which means they won something, but it's a one-game thing, so it's kind of like a fake playoff series win, but whatever. These Game 5s have not been fun for National fans. Let's look back at them. 2012, at home, Drew Storen gives up 4 hits and 4 runs with 2 outs in the 9th inning. Washington had a 96% chance to win at one point after getting the second out. 2016, Game 5, at home again. 4 runs in the 7th inning that started off with Max Scherzer giving up a leadoff homer and then 4 other pitching changes made. It didn't go well. 2017, at home again, jumped out to a 4-0 lead against the Cubs, but gave up runs in the 5th, 6th, and 7th, and they lost another series again. This time, the Nationals are on the road, and road teams in Game 5s are 18-9 in their last so many games, so shout out the Nationals for playing the long con to make the road team look better by losing all those Game 5s at home. This prospectus, the Nationals win their first real playoff series, taking Game 5 on the road.
Bueller, biggest game ever. Can't handle the heat. Gets outpitched by Strasburg's Nats into the final 4. Count it.
Oh, wait, that's a bye?
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm riding the Nats bandwagon.
Oh, I thought it was Bueller as in like you're taunting him.
It's his biggest game ever. He doesn't come across with the goods. Strassi gets the best of him.
Double by it just to make sense. As I mentioned yesterday during What Are You Doing, there's a Tennessee radio host that is camping out on the roof of a car dealership until Tennessee win a game. So far, the 1-4 Vols have only beaten Chattanooga. This week, Tennessee hosts the Bulldogs in Mississippi State, and Tennessee are 9-point home underdogs. The Vols haven't been competitive in their two conference games, losing by 31 to Florida and 29 to Georgia. They're one of the 25 worst teams, according to Sports Reference's rating system, just ahead of college football powerhouses like Rutgers. Oof. It's not that I'm rooting for a guy to keep sleeping on an air mattress on a roof outside in the winter, but I kind of want to see how long this guy is going to live on an air mattress on a roof outside in the winter. The prospectus, Tennessee saves a man's life, possibly, and they beat Mississippi State at home.
Mississippi State, the key here is it's Mississippi State. You know, I think because people don't pay attention to a program like that very often, you kind of remember, with Dan Mullen, they were pretty good, right? And so was Ole Miss, and they were in the Egg Bowl. But the difference is, this Mississippi State team isn't very good, and they don't have very good defense. I actually think Tennessee might get bailed out this week. Ooh. And win that game. Wow. So save the man.
Last one here. The Philadelphia Flyers have been in the forefront of fan engagement the last 2 years. Firstly, they gave us Gritty, the perfectly creepy and adorable orange furball thing mascot. And now at Wells Fargo Arena, they are introducing Rage Rooms. For $35 or $60 for two people, that's a great deal, you can go into a disassembly room, use a sledgehammer, bat, or hammer to break as much crap as you can in 5 minutes. This happening in Philly is perfect, but it also sounds perfect for just anyone who is mad at their team, like any Braves fan, and could take out all of their bad injury into just breaking things. Why not go to a safe place and break crap that's there to be broken? I can't think of a single stadium or a single franchise right now that wouldn't make $100 trillion with this idea. The prospectus: every professional team and stadium should have a rage room available to their fans.
That's going to end poorly. Somebody's going to bring in a knife or a gun or something, and it's going to end badly. I'm dumping on this one. Sell
that. Debbie Downer,
for the
Steve.
Sake of decency and the humanity.
No, the team provides the things you break and the things you break them with. You sign a waiver, you get a helmet, some eye protection, and then when your team goes down 10-0 in the first inning, forget making money on beer sales. You just start making money by bashing stuff in a room. In 5 minutes, you just beat a bat into a wall and you leave.
Take an Uber home and go smash a light and leave us alone.
That's the thing, is you don't have to do it, though. All right, you be sad about it.
Are we done here?
Yeah, we're done.
Done! All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, even though in the past, when we've had a Friday game, we've adjusted our schedule, and we will be doing Frostbrewed Friday on Thursday out at the Poorhouse in Springfield. We are going to do Friday Duck Talk, brought to you by Beinmeyer at IHOP from 8 to 10, 8 to 9, excuse me. It'll be on our Big Brother station, 96.1 KZL, and as always, the folks at IHOP with their A-plus hospitality will offer up free pancakes for anybody who shows up for Friday Duck Talk. It's brought to you by Beinmeyer. I'm your host. Like I said, come on down, have a bite to eat, a cup of coffee. We'll do the show from 8 to 9. And like I said, on our rock station with Sid back in the studio, making sure I behave myself on 96.1 KZL. And, of course, when it comes to the game, make sure to tune in to every Duck football game right here on KUJZ 95.3, The Score. All right, talking Ducks Colorado in the next hour. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Chad Brown, now a University of Colorado Hall of Famer, inducted a couple years back. He was a member of McCartney's 1990 AP National Champion. So a lot to talk there. Sports Talk is next, 95.3 The Score.
And that's the double truth, Ruth.